Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news today, Tuesday, October 12, 2021. Some activists in South Sudan accused the Zain telecommunication company of compromising customers' privacy.
On the 29th of August this year, Zain duplicated the SIM cards of members of the coalition, and those numbers were then activated on telephones and they were used. Since then, those numbers are active.
And thousands of families affected by floods in Unity State are asking communities in Lake State for land.
What I want to tell you, the government officials and the NGOs who came here to us, if you get a problem in your house, you come to your neighbor for help. We have suffered a lot. Our bodies are paining.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An activist with the group known as the People's Coalition for Civil Action is accusing the Zain telecommunication company of allegedly tapping telephone conversation and duplicating SIM cards on the request of the South Sudan security agencies. A technical director at Zain denies the company is tapping or duplicating SIM cards. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Civil society activist Rajab Muhandis, a member of the People's Coalition for Civil Action, claims Zain Mobile Phone Company has been compromising the privacy and safety of Zain customers. He says contacts of two of their members were hacked at the time when they called for nationwide protests against the transitional government on the eve of what was termed as the Day of Awakening on August 30th.
On the 29th of August this year, Zain duplicated the SIM cards of members of the coalition, and those numbers were then activated on telephones and they were used. Since then, those numbers are active, and if you communicate to these lines, they are actually the messages go through indicating that they are being used in telephones, and there is no other company that would duplicate these numbers except Zain. And so far, the members of the coalition have sufficient reasons to believe that these numbers were used to make an attempt to hack into social media lines of these members. And also their emails.
Mohandis says most of the people associated with the PCCA have been using their phones only with Wi-Fi, but without a SIM card to avoid being traced. He says he realized his number was used for Facebook recovery to access his Facebook account. In addition, Mohandis says on August 29th, when his colleagues tried to access their WhatsApp messages, they received messages saying their numbers were registered in other telephones. In addition, Mohandis says on August 29th, when his colleagues tried to access their WhatsApp messages, they received messages saying their numbers were registered in other telephones, hence they could not receive messages. He says based on his technical knowledge, when you pull out your SIM card from your phone and activate it in a new phone, then you will use the WhatsApp connected to that number only in the new phone because it is where you will receive a new activation code to confirm it. Mohandis says the coalition is going to pursue legal action against Zain.
The coalition is finalizing consultations with competent lawyers to file a court injunction against Zain Telephone Company at a competent court outside the country. And there is every reason and justification to proceed with this decision.
Wilson Ladu, technical director for the Zain South Sudan Operating Network, says the company has not received any official complaint from the People's Coalition for Civil Action and denies the company has been tapping users' communications.
We don't have tapping system because it's against the law. So any subscriber, their lines are protected in case that, in terms that we as Zain, we don't tap. you don't have that right to tap. It is not there for them to tap. And technically, you cannot have the same number duplicated. Why? Because it has an address. You know, you cannot have two addresses. It's one. You know, it's only number is one number.
Ladu says people should know that telecommunication networks have what they call a 90-day rule, which means if someone purchases a SIM card and doesn't receive a call or a message or even use it to make phone calls within 90 days, the company has the right to recycle the SIM card into the marketplace. He says in South Sudan, the company gives a duration of 1 year before they recycle SIM cards.
If you don't use it for 1 year, based on the rules that people have for something called non-RGU, which is non-revenue generated event number, then this number can be allocated to someone, and this is internationally. Even if you go to Uganda, go to Kenya, if you have a number, you're not using it for 3 months, you will not get the number again. It can be taken. But what doesn't mean that this number is duplicated, that someone is using it and then another person is using it.
Ladu calls on the People's Coalition for Civil Action to raise their complaints directly to the company so that their concerns can be addressed. South Sudan in Focus tried calling two of the numbers in question, one of which went through but no one answered. There was no answer on the other SIM card number owned by an activist. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
Authorities in Upper Nile State have set November 30th as the deadline for individuals who have occupied more than 100 government and private houses in Malakal Town to leave those houses. Some residents of Upper Nile State capital Malakal fled to neighboring Sudan or sought refuge at the United Nations-run protection of civilian sites during the 2013 conflict in South Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Thousands of Malakal residents moved to neighboring Sudan while others resettled at UN-run POC sites following the outbreak of conflict which left 383,000 people dead and millions displaced, according to the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. The state government official says following the signing of the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement, many residents who remained in Malakal illegally occupied government buildings and houses belonging to people who sought refuge elsewhere. Sadala Deng, the Upper Nile State Information and Communication Minister, says the state government has decided to evict all those who illegally settled in government and private houses in Malakal Town. Deng says state officials formed a committee to identify and evict people living illegally in government houses and advise them to return to their own houses and contribute to building peace in Malakal.
Because of the heavy rainfall in Upper Nile State, the committee has given those people who occupied government houses until November. That is for the case of the government houses. And in the case of the houses whose owners are in the POCs or outside such Juba or Sudan, the state government is going to make an official announcement and conclude the formation of a committee after a council of ministers meeting this month.
Deng says once that happens, the state government will form another committee to ensure that people who are illegally occupying private-owned houses vacate. Deng acknowledged that residents who illegally occupied other people's houses in Malakal actually protected those houses from being destroyed during the 2016 conflict. He says in the coming months, the government expects internally displaced persons to voluntarily return to their homes.
We expect those in POCs by November or December to have voluntarily left the camp and return to their homes. The government would not force them to leave, but if anyone finds his house empty, he or she must go back and resettle. The state government is going to evacuate those staying there so as to leave the houses to the rightful owner.
Deng says the evacuation process will be carried out peacefully unless certain individuals decide to resist being evicted. He says such individuals will be dealt with legally.
We talked about those before, and we have even given out a warning to those staying in people's houses. We believed in it. We will not be like that, because those at home have been protecting the house from being destroyed. However, if there is any individual who refuses to move from those, then the government may take legal steps with him after the formation of the committee.
Some people residing in IDP camps whose house have been occupied illegally says it is good that the state government wants civilians to return to their homes and engage in peace building. Peter Edward, who owns a house in Malakal, says he visited his house and confirmed it is occupied. He says he is ready to go home, but urged the state authorities to first provide security for people who are returning to their homes.
Security is the number one priority, because my security is very important. And if the government provides a security, then I am ready to return to my home in Malakal town.
Mary Richard, another homeowner in Malakal town, says soldiers and their families have occupied her house since 2016 when a fresh round of fighting broke out. Richard says she has often visited her house over the past few years, and the soldiers' family that is living in it has assured her that they are ready to vacate whenever she decides to return.
Those soldiers, they said they are ready to move out anytime. Before, there was a captain, but during their rotation, he then brought his brother to stay in the house. The problem in Malakal here is that the place has become a desert, and there's nowhere one can settle. There is no one who does not want to go back to Malakal town. Our fears were the deadly conflict in Malakal. But if there is any security, then everyone will go back.
Malakal town is among the areas hardest hit by the 2013 and 2016 conflict. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Unity State, where hundreds of South Sudanese fleeing floods in Unity State are asking authorities in Lake State to provide land for permanent resettlement. The internal displaced persons say they do not plan to return to Unity State's Panjiger County due to constant floodings. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Rumbek.
Local leaders say nearly 600 IDPs arrived in Kotpayam of Lake State, Rumbek East County, from Panjiger County last week due to flooding in their area. They say most of the displaced are women and children. Speaking on behalf of the IDPs, Mama Chatem Shaguar says aside from humanitarian needs like food and shelter, the IDPs are asking the host community and Lagos state officials to allocate land for permanent resettlement.
What I want to tell you, the government officials and the NGOs who came here to us, if you get a problem in your house, you come to your neighbor for help. We have suffered a lot. Our bodies are paining. Serious flood invaded our area. There are too much mosquitoes. No food left with us because the flood swept away everything from us. We don't have clothes, no mats or mattresses. We sleep on the floor, which is wet with water. We are South Sudanese, and we have one government.
Rumbek East County Commissioner Bapor Malek Arop welcomed the displaced and assured they would be protected.
We people of Kotpayam have welcomed you with the whole heart. Feel at home. South Sudan is for us all. So, as you came, don't think that you are in a different area. This is also your home, the same like Unity State. This is my message to the IDPs and to you, the host community. Respect these people who have come to stay with us. Don't touch their women. If you do so, you face the consequence.
Speaking on behalf of the community, traditional chief Sawad Malwal assured the IDPs that he will allocate them land in Lagos State.
My message to you is that feel free. We have a vast land here. So when rainy season ends, we will allocate a good place where you will be accessing water, medication, and a school for your children.
The chairperson of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Lagos State, Dud Malwal, is appealing to aid agencies operating in the state to support the IDPs. Dud says the children and elderly look extremely weak and malnourished. Malwal says he was in Rumbeng North County, where he witnessed similar cases where IDPs are in need of emergency supplies. Malwal says he has ordered county authorities to start registering the IDPs.
I have seen the most important thing are three major issues now, which is food, shelters, the emergency drug. It's not you alone here. I was in Rumbeng North. And my purpose visiting Rumbeng North is the issue of flooding and the IDPs from Mayandit. When I left there yesterday, I have ordered the county coordinator to start the registration of IDPs from Mayandit immediately and send the list.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OSHA, says some 426,000 people were displaced by floods in South Sudan since May of this year. UN OSHA says people in Jonglei and Unity State, followed by Northern Barrel Ghazal and Upper Nile States, have been the worst affected by the floods. According to initial assessments, priority needs include food assistance, emergency shelter, and non-food items, water, sanitation, and hygiene services, and hygiene kits. For VOA News, I am William Sande Mabor in Rumbek, Lagos State.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, World Health Organization discusses plans for COVID vaccinations across Africa. Find out how after this break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America, and in our Tuesday's health segment, we look at the struggle to stop COVID from killing people in Africa. A group of World Health Organization experts is calling for 70% of the global population to be fully vaccinated by mid-2020 to prevent COVID-19 pandemic from progressing in more dangerous ways. The 15-member strategic advisory group of experts, known as SURGE, which makes recommendations to WHO on vaccine policy and strategy, just concluded a four-day meeting. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The experts say more than enough vaccines are available to cover everyone by the middle of next year if the doses are not hoarded by wealthy countries and are shared equitably with poorer nations which, as of yet, do not have them. WHO Director of Immunization Vaccines and Biologicals, Catherine O'Brien, says it is urgent to get the doses to places that are falling behind in the race to vaccinate.
And unless we do that, we will continue to have transmission, and transmission will lead to more variants. And the issue of the variants is that there is the potential for those variants to escape immune pressure and to basically undo much of the progress that has been made.
The experts recommend people who are moderately and severely immune compromised should be offered an additional or third dose of all COVID-19 vaccines. O'Brien says the third dose should be administered 1 to 3 months after people have received their second shot.
The intent of the third dose is to induce that person's immune system to have protection that would be at the level that was demonstrated to prevent against severe disease, hospitalization, and death in the clinical trials, which excluded people with immunocompromising conditions.
The SAGE experts say these additional shots are different from booster shots, which are not needed at this stage of the pandemic. For now, they say it is more important that people who have not been inoculated receive their jabs before people who are already vaccinated get a third dose. They say they will discuss booster shots at their next meeting November 11th and issue further recommendations then. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
From Geneva, we move to Khartoum, where a group of Sudanese Lawyers Association have launched a legal system aimed at supporting the democratic transition in the country and oppose any moves intended to disrupt the transition to democracy. The leaders behind the initiative say recent escalation of tension between the military and the civilian components of the government could threaten transition to democracy in Sudan. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Khartoum.
Speaking at a news conference in Khartoum yesterday, members of the five Sudanese lawyers groups said they teamed up to voluntarily provide legal support toward the democratic transformation in Sudan. They say the new mechanism will focus on assisting the committee formed by the transitional government at the start of the transitional period to dismantle the roots of the previous administration of ousted President Omar al-Bashir and to claim stolen public funds. The legal team will also offer suggestions on reforming the justice system, including the judiciary, public prosecution, and the justice ministry, as stipulated in the constitutional document and the Juba Peace Agreement. Nasruddin Rahal, a member of the mechanism, says recent political tensions between the military and the civilian sides in the transitional government should come to an end. He says the new group of lawyers stand ready to take on any side in a court of law that tries to block the democratic transformation of government.
We have come to realize that the political process in the country is closely linked to the legal process, and we have seen that there are tensions among the components of the government and the revolution. As legal experts, we think that the tensions are due to a lack of clear legal framework, and as advocates, we have a legal right and duty to intervene and defend the truth.
Military and civilian leaders in the government continue to trade accusations over who was responsible for the last man's failed coup attempt. The head of Sudan's Sovereign Council, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and his deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, accused some of their civilian partners in the transitional government of neglecting their executive role of service delivery while bickering over leadership positions. Rahal accuses both military and civilian government leaders of doing little toward implementing the objectives of the transitional government. He notes it has been more than 2 years since the transitional government came into power and justice has yet to be served.
Up to this moment, no single member of the previous administration has been convicted in a court of law, nor has any suspect been identified in the case of killing the martyrs of the revolution. This is due to the weak judicial institutions and the absence of independent and legal entities that monitor this process during this transitional period.
Another member of the mechanism, Hatim Khorshid, says the new group will work with other regional and international bodies to ensure that the transitional government follows the correct path to democracy. He says thousands of Sudanese families are still longing for justice for their loved ones and that those charged with war crimes should be turned over to the International Criminal Court.
We are ready from this moment on to open cases in Geneva, The Hague, in the African Union, in the US and anywhere. We will make sure that any individual who has committed a crime faces justice. And I hope that all of us will work to serve this country and put its interests above any individual interest.
Lawyer Abdul Baghi Al-Badawi says the group will support those prosecutions, but notes there are less than 500 prosecutors in the entire country, and that small number of prosecuting attorneys delays court cases. He says his group stands ready to provide free legal support to those seeking justice.
It is incumbent upon us to fulfill the objectives of the revolution, and this mechanism is crucial because we need to legally support this transition to realize the democratic transformation in accordance with the constitutional document.
The lawyers called on the government to quickly appoint a chief justice and complete appointments in all judicial organizations aside from establishing the Legislative Council. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
A Jonglei State Local Football Association has suspended its president for allegedly embezzling more than $3,000. The secretary general of the association says the money missing was solicited from well-wishers. For VOA News, Deng Gai Deng has more from the Jonglei State Capital Bor.
David Kuala Teng, the Secretary General of Bor Local Football Association, known as BOLFA, says Abraham Majuk, the president of the association, was suspended in accordance with the rules of the association.
We made this suspension according to Article 24, Section E. We gave the Board of Directors a mandate of suspending a member of the board. And it also, in respect to Article 59, Local Association Regulation, Status of 2012, and 2019, we also have a responsibility of opening legal proceedings against any person who has misused the fund of the association.
Ateng says corruption is unacceptable in the association. He says BOLFA wants Ajuk to return the money to its coffers as soon as possible or face legal action. Ateng says the money totaling to $3,200 was solicited from well-wishers in July with the aim of leveling the flooded Bor playing field. He says in September, the association realized the money was missing from the association's account.
We were planning to use this money to level the playing ground as Freedom Street is now having a lot of water. So we were planning so that we can bring some string of the sand to the pitch and we level it so that we can secure playground so that we run our activities on it.
When contacted for comment over his suspension, Ajuk declined to comment.
I've got nothing to prove, but I'm following the right video, so I can't say anything about it. As I say, I'm not saying anything about it.
Civil society activist David Garang with the Jonglei Civil Society Network says corruption has become a disease and should be eradicated in all its forms from public institutions, including football clubs. Garang says leaders should be exemplary in demonstrating integrity, and if they don't, it retards the development of their country.
That needs for leaders to be the one showing the integrity of the institution and not to be accused of something. So if there is any accusation that comes to the association like this, then this person has to be availed in court so that yes, he can justify himself or what happened in the course of this funding.
Activist Garang urges authorities to ensure that anyone accused of embezzling public funds is thoroughly investigated and if suspected of doing wrong, charged and brought before a competent court of law. Last year, the South Sudan Football Federation sued their former boss, Chabur Goch, for misusing about $500,000 and 2 million South Sudanese pounds in addition to SSFA properties such as cars during his presidency. A high court in Juba later dismissed the case, citing a lack of evidence. In 2019, the World Football Governing Body, FIFA, banned the former South Sudan FA president, Chabur Goch, from all football-related activities for 10 years for misappropriation of funds and bribery. In a statement released by FIFA, Chabur Goch was found guilty of having misappropriated FIFA funds as well as having accepted gifts or benefits in violation of the FIFA Code of Ethics. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor, Jonglei State.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Mr. Nice and the song Kikulacho. I'm John Tanza. Thank you for being with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Najua kelele za chura zimnyimi tembo kunywa maji. Najua la kuku halimpati wewe utalijua jijiwe. Sikujua kama rafiki yangu huyu ni bonge la nyoka. Tena ni chii anayejifanya yeye mwanafundo. Tena ana
kupata urafiki.